Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We love it that you're here with us, listening in.
We do indeed. Thanks for hanging out. We'd love for you to join the conversation. Log on to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow and chat alongside with us.
Don't forget Twitter. You can get us that way as well, @TheMusicRowShow. And after the show, if you're so inclined, you can check out Instagram, also @TheMusicRowShow.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. So yeah. We're going to put lots of pictures up there. But in the meantime, Scott, right. Why don't you introduce our next guest here?
All right, you ready for this?
Yes,
I've done a lot of research.
Should I sit down?
A lot of research online. Billy Lee was a child actor who appeared in many films from the mid-30s to the early 40s.
You look good for your
age. No, wait. Billy Lee is currently the lead singer of the house band at B.B. King's in Orlando and has performed with the Platters and Sly and the Family Stone.
Love those guys.
No, wait. Billy Lee is a rockabilly pioneer and songwriter who recorded for the legendary Sun Records and is best remembered for his 1957 single, Flying Saucers Rock and Roll.
I love that song.
Nope, that's not it.
Oh.
Here's the deal. There's a lot of Billy Lees on the interwebs. There's even a few of them here in Nashville.
What do you know?
I should have known that before it changed.
You should have known that. But here's the real one. Billy hails from the undisputable country music mecca, Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah, whole country.
He has been playing and touring and writing since he was 17 years old. He had a big old hit with Gary Allen called The One and has been part of the Nashville songwriter tapestry for over 20 years.
Wow.
We're going to have a fun time this hour. It is a pleasure to say our friend Billy Lee, welcome to the Music Row Show.
You know.
All right.
You know, Brooklyn, New York truly is the country music capital of the world.
I know that.
Is it really?
I heard more country music in the courtyards of the World Trade Center than I did in Nashville. Every Wednesday they had these free country concerts, man.
Really?
Everybody from Kathy Mattea to the Dixie Chicks to Rascal Flatts. It was awesome. I mean, really.
Now, that was probably back when our buddy that wrote the book about country music in Nashville, the radio, or in New York City, the radio station.
Yes.
Ed Salomon.
He
wrote a book about that, but it was, you know, because New York hadn't had a country station for a long time. And then they did, and all of a sudden there was a whole lot going on there.
Well, then we saw, you know, because there was a lot of concerts going on, but if we didn't know about them, you know, I mean, if they weren't on the radio saying, hey, Alan Jackson's playing here, or Brooks and Dunn here, how would we know?
Right.
We researched. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just not the way it works.
It was before the interwebs.
I wish I could remember the name of the station.
Yeah. It was W something.
That might have been Case. It might have been Case something.
Yeah. No.
It might have been.
Not in New York.
Maybe.
It might have been. Who knows? Anyway, God bless them.
Anyway, so you've been in the music business pretty much all your adult life, which... What were you thinking, first of all, you know, doing that?
Well, I woke up the other morning thinking that exact same thing. I was in the recording studio, you know, and like and everything started sounding the same. It doesn't matter what I was doing, the drums, the bass, the guitars. I'm, you know, trying to write a hit song. So
right.
I have a studio, and we'll talk more about that later. Sorry. And then I'm like kind of depressed, and Scott calls me up and says, hey, you want to be on the show? I said, hey, somebody knows I'm doing stuff. Thank you, buddy. And and here I am, and that's very cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, we're not really here to talk about music. We heard you're a good interior designer. We wanted to get some tips. No, that's not. Is that the wrong Billy Lee?
But what Hina was asking.
let's
bring it back.
Amazingly confused look on your face is awesome. No, but really, what got you started wanting to be in the music business and pursue that career?
There's four guys. They're called the Fab Four.
Yeah.
Beatles. You know, they were my saving grace. They saved my life. And I was a big John Lennon fan when I was about 13 or 14 years old. I remember Beatles played in Forest Hills Tennis Stadium in Queens, New York. And I saw them. And I had a Brownie camera and only got one picture out of it. And it was a picture of John Lennon holding his Rickenbacker standing in front of a Vox amp. And
wow.
That's what I wanted to be and look like. Well, it didn't work out with the looks, but that's exactly what it was. I finally got that amp and that guitar, by the way.
So wait a minute. You actually saw them in concert, is what you're telling us, in Queens.
Yeah.
Could you hear them?
You know, yeah. Queens was not Shea Stadium. It was a tennis stadium, and I was about you know, probably about 20 rows back, and a good songwriter friend of mine, Shane Box, said she was at the same concert at the same time.
Kidding.
So I thought that was weird.
Nice.
And I just found it out. But no, that. But you know, I got caught in the Beatlemania thing.
Sure.
And then just kept moving on, man. I just kept moving on, and got a high school band together. Every block in Brooklyn had a band.
Right.
You know, and I was the guy who had the basement cellar, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
And I could get the guys down there and rehearse. So, you know, it's a dirt floor with drums. They only actually sounded pretty good. But I finally put concrete down and it changed the acoustics. But that's how it started. And, you know, we would play from band to band and go around and play in churches and high school bands. And you know the deal, man. It was just like the 60s were invigorating, you know, as far as music. And I kept going. And I guess the reason why I'm here today, 120 years later, is because I was the guy that was really into music. I was the guy on the break that went to fix the Hammond organ and re-EQ'd the PA and tune my guitar. And, well, all the other guys are going out looking for girls. I was the music guy, you know, and so I stuck with it. Most of them stopped. A few of them continued. And
really?
some great musicians, man, that I've worked with over the years. And
so in these bands, were you the singer? Were you the lead guitar?
Well,
what were you doing?
Well, we changed. I mainly became... I was always the lead, always seemed to be the lead singer,
because
I was the only person that bought to learn the words, I guess, you know. So,
an important aspect.
So that's why words were important. The Nashville kind of stuck in my heart because lyrics were real important. I was always the word guy, sat around. Most people didn't care. Most people cared more about the groove. And the groove was cool, too. And then, you know, hey, you know, we have Joan Jett, you know, and we have Paul McCartney, so it all works. And
it all works.
And I just continued, man, just kept going and... And I have a lot of friends in New York City. Hopefully they're listening right now. And they used to come and be very supportive. We'd play at these, you know, every place had a Friday night or Saturday night dance going on.
Mm-hmm.
All the Catholic schools, all the Knights of Columbus, all these places. I mean, there was always some place to play.
That's pretty awesome.
You really got it going.
Did you pretty much have to play for free? Or did you actually make a few bucks?
No, absolutely not. You know, no, not really. I mean... I played and it was cash. No, I mean, of course we played free gigs. Sometimes it was $20 gigs. Sometimes you got a hot dog, you know, whatever it was, you know. I did keep money in my underwear drawer. And then finally I had enough money to buy a 1969 Camaro cash.
Mm.
I still had the bill. It was only $3,200. $3,297. Can you imagine?
Wow.
No.
That was a new one?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, me and my brother, it was really cool. And, No, I mean, you know, I made a living, and then later on, I kept playing, and then I went through high school, moved to out west, and kept playing, played a lot.
Out west, in
Phoenix.
Okay.
In Phoenix for a while, yeah. I went to Arizona State. I thought it was really cool because I was living in New York City, and everybody was going to colleges that were in the middle of the city.
Right.
On 23rd Street, you know, and then I went to a college up in Harlem. And so your campus is really 6 feet around you, you know. And so you know what? This might sound funny, but you look at Archie Comics, and they went to Ridgewood High or wherever it was.
Riverdale.
Thank
Riverdale.
You. Man, you know, I wanted to be in a campus like that.
Okay.
Right? So I was coerced by my wife at the time to check out Arizona, and Arizona State University campus was Archie Comics, you know, and I fell in love with it and stayed, went to school, stayed on for a few years, and then decided, you know, to do music. It was either going to be LA or New York, and I was already familiar with New York, and went back to New York and just continued on.
Well, let's talk about that, because I just read a Springsteen biography, and a large portion of the book, several chapters, talked about him in the early years and playing all these clubs in New York and New Jersey and just that scene. What are your memories of that world as a musician in your early 20s?
We'd have to have a 5-hour show for that, but we'll try.
All right,
basically, you know, I started doing, you know, myself, going down to Greenwich Village, which was a trip in the 60s, because it really was a trip in the 60s. I mean, it really... And, you know, I mean, it was like you'd walk into any club, and generally, I don't know, I don't even remember if they charge you to get in.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was, you know, you can afford it, you know, a couple of bucks. And you would just see mind-blowing people. I mean, just mind blowing. I went to the Bitter End one night. Oh. This changed my life. And I went to see B.B. King. Can you imagine B.B. King at the Bitter End? And they played until wee hours of the morning. They played until, they dropped. And then Elvin Bishop came in to play with him. Then it gets better. I remember if it was about 1 a.m., 1:30, Eric Clapton came in. So I'm looking at B.B. King, Elvin Bishop, and Eric Clapton.
My gosh.
I was done. And then also I saw, Gary Talley lives here.
The Box Tops.
I saw the Box Tops at the Bitter End. I mean, it was just the visual turned me on. It was such a turn on. There was something about the amplifiers and the guitars,
Sure.
It wasn't the Kiss layout. It was much more tame, but it was very cool. And the layout, was very beautiful to me. And it was art. I thought it was art, And I was into Vox amplifiers at the time. And they just kind of look. Yeah, they have like them.
With that these gold on the front. Yeah.
Yeah, man. They got all sorts of stuff and metal holding them together. And the tops were like angular. Mm-hmm. It was like, wow, pretty interesting. And Rickenbacker had amplifiers that went the other way. Instead of them being fat at the bottom and skinny at the top, they were the other way around. So they kind of came up at an angle, which I thought was cool. You see these things. Oh, my God. We saw, Steppenwolf and of course, more than anything else, it was a Fillmore East, where you would see The Who for $3.
Wow.
See the Quadrophenia, which, you could hear three blocks away when you left the theater.
Hearing aids cost more than that now.
Yeah. Exactly. No, it was very cool. Santana playing till 5 in the morning. I mean, it was unbelievable. I ran into a guy years later, somebody told me, who was a doctor at the Fillmore, which was kind of crazy, with doctors. Fillmore basically asked him what he did. Basically, he helped give birth, and ODs. I mean, that's what it was. I mean, people, they're going to the, they're like in.
Even if they're a show, 9 months pregnant.
Water breaks, man, guess who we're playing? I'm going, so.
Yeah.
Pete Townsend hits that power chord, the water breaks, and pandemonium.
It was just awesome.
We'll have you back out there before the encore. Don't worry.
it was just great. So those are the things that turned me on and kept me going. And I'm sure it did for a lot of other people as well.
Absolutely.
When you talk to people, I have my friends and great, great musicians back in New York City who are, still doing music. My good friend Mike owns a huge recording studio, part owner of a studio, and people who stayed in it, that I know, and musicians, just keep going. And that's really a turn on to me.
Then you've described that music scene pretty accurately. Yeah. What was this music scene like for you when you first came here? I mean, how different was that?
that was funny. August 19th, 1991.
Okay.
I stepped foot in Nashville. It was such a different, we all know, it was such a different world than it is today.
Sure.
I think I went to the Bluebird. I went to the Bluebird, I was on tour. I did all sorts of stuff, playing guitar, and I thought I was hot, And then I come down here, and I see, who do I see? I pick around. Well, you can just walk into the Bluebird, by the way. You'll just pay at the door. I know it was, Gary Burr, and it was Bob DePiro. And
Jim Photoflow.
Jim Photoflow.
Photoglow.
God, I forgot.
Keyboard player.
Keyboard player.
Oh, what's his name? I know who you're talking about.
No, this was whoever it was. It was somebody else. But anyway, I think it was Chuck Jones.
Oh, wow.
Chuck Jones. So, oh, my God. These guys are playing the stuff I'm hearing on the radio. It's freaked me out.
Uh-huh.
In the rock music world, that's kind of not the way it is because you almost don't know the songwriters unless you're one of them or you're close to them. I mean, Aerosmith comes out with a tune, Queen comes out with a tune. You don't even know who really wrote it. Or you're just assuming, who the people are.
You assume it's the band, usually.
Yeah, generally we thought it was the band. Then we find out it was, all the big hit songs were written by somebody else of the bands, except the Beatles and stuff like that and the Stones. They're different. So I came down here and it was just like, ugh. It was like, wow, I got a lot to learn.
Let's make a little cliffhanger out of that. Okay. Billy Lee has a lot to learn, and we're going to learn more about that when we come back. But we'd like to remind you that this segment was brought to you by our very good friends at Toyota of Cool Springs. Now, Hino and I are both Toyota drivers, and we just love these guys at this dealership.
Yeah, we do. I mean, it's such a comfortable place to be, and you don't usually say that about a car dealership, but it really is. There's a bunch of low-key people there. They treat you well. They really go out of their way to provide an excellent experience for their customers, which I really, really love.
That's right. Toyota of Cool Springs. Ask for George, the owner. He's going to take good care of you. On the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com.
We're going to be right back in just a few minutes with more of Billy Lee here on The Music Row Show.
This world is just a small town lost in the crowd. You can almost hear the sound of a lost and lonely heart. Lonely heart. Bare-legged high heels, baby, kick them off. Let's blow this town, put the top down, and drive for miles. Drive for miles. I just want to.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with hit songwriter Billy Lee, and that's a tune of his called Be With You.
Yeah.
I love that. That's really cool.
I wrote that with Antoinette Olsen, a good friend of mine.
I know Antoinette. Yeah. If she's awesome. Listening, she's tell her
favorite,
I said hi.
One of my favorite co-writers and one of my best friends.
Sweet. Well, we made you strap on your guitar during the break there, so we might as well make you use it. You feel like doing a song for us?
Now?
Yeah, no, no. Why not?
Oh, man. You know, you asked me before, what songs do I like? What's my favorite song? And I have no idea.
I love that one.
Yeah, it's a great song. The way I do things is always to play stuff out and not for friends and see the audience reactions. Really,
okay.
When they like it, all of a sudden, that's my favorite song.
Right.
So my newest favorite song is a ballad I wrote with Chase Hine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
We all know Chase.
Yeah, he's been on the show.
He was at the Commodore last night. F me, I opened for him. And it's a ballad, and everybody always comes up and says, I love that song. They write it on my webpage and, you know, on my Facebook. And so I'm going to play it for you. It's called Sometimes When You Fall, You Fly. It's a romantic thing.
Nice.
Scott, this is for you.
Thank you, Jesus. Nice.
What you wanna do now that I'm here with you, and the moon is ours tonight. It don't really matter where, just ask and I'll take you there. 'Cause baby, you know I just wanna wake up next to you. I never ever thought I'd ever feel this way, but baby, I do. 'Cause sometimes when you fall, you fly. I ain't never felt so high. You take me there. Girl, you got my heart spinning. But just one kiss from your lips, I like it, I like it, yeah. Sometimes, when you fall, you fly. So I'm giving myself to you. Nothing more I'd rather do than get lost in your love. I see my future in your eyes. There's no doubt the time is right. 'Cause you're all that I dream of. I just wanna wake up holding you. I never ever thought I'd ever feel this way, but baby, I do. 'Cause sometimes when you fall, you fly. I ain't ever felt so high. You take me there. Girl, you got my you fly. I just want to wake up next to you. I never ever thought I'd ever feel this way, but baby, I do. Sometimes when you fall, you fly. I ain't never felt so high. You take me there. Girl, you got my heart spinning. Just one kiss from your lips. Fall, you fly. Whoa. Sometimes when you fall, you fly.
All right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you.
Very
you know,
nice.
I think all the singers in town have got this like Nashville crud going on in their
yeah.
throat. It's awful.
Nah, I'm going to go to your Facebook good. Page Thank right you. Now and tell you I like that song.
There you go. So before the break, you were talking about when you first got here, and I don't know if you've ever read A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, the Mark Twain book, but I'm kind of I want to hear more about the Brooklyn Italian on Music Row the first year. You know, what was it that what were you doing? What were you doing?
It's really kind of simple and complex. I was... at the time, I was doing a lot of dance music.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I made a living. I had a small studio in Brooklyn. We call it Cozy. It was on the third floor of a brownstone walk-up. And I did a lot of music out of there.
But when you say dance music,
dance
you're talking
music,
like...
hip-hop, freestyle, you know.
Okay.
I became like a big drum programmer and worked with a lot of hip-hop groups. And, you know, it was kind of... interesting. But what happens is after about a year of doing that, I realized that I wasn't even playing guitar or anything. And I was a guitar player. So, and then when I played guitar solos, I was playing them
on the
keyboard. How weird was that?
That's funny.
So here I do. I come down and I see Gary Burr and I see Bob DePuro. And, you know, Bob is more like a rock guy.
Right.
He was like an eighth note guy. And Gary is like this picker. And I'm like, God, you know. And so basically... it was real people playing real music, and I was coming out of a world where it was, you know, not real music. It was computerized.
Right.
Now it's a lot different, but you know, with the computers, and it was back then a lot. Mostly it was MIDI. So, you know, I just figured, okay, I had a lot to learn, and I remember working with a rap group in the studio, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And they come in and they're doing this rap record. Rap. This is at a studio I was working at in New York City. And so, they like using gunshot sounds. So I said, okay, now this is cool. Well, you know, okay, I'll go down to the library because we were using this Akai sampler. We had a million things we can do. And the guy puts his hand up and says, no, man, I want to use my own gun. And I said, dude, how are you going to do that? Oh, he had it all down, man. He goes, look, you take two telephone books and you put them in the corner and you put a Sennheiser 441. It's like this guy knows.
He's really thought
how to
get, of
he's
this
like, and I just shoot into it. And I go, you're going to shoot into, in the studio. This is not going to happen. Anyway, I wound up pressing. I said, let me go down to the library, man. I got to go check some stuff out. So I went down. I just pressed the down button and I never went back up to the session because this was not a very comfortable thing. I remember taking a shower the next morning, and I just left the shower, and I said, okay, I'm going to Sam Ash Music. And my wife said to me, well, what are you doing there? I said, well, I'm going country, and I'm buying a Telecaster. So I went and bought a Telecaster, and that was it, man. And I just started coming down here. So what I did, basically, is I came down here, and I would, like, stay at hotels. I would rent, you know, parts of homes and houses and stuff like that. I did this for years and years and years. But my secret to me anyway, I thought it was cool, but nobody ever followed my advice, as I would come in with a box of T120 cassettes and a cassette recorder, and I'd plug it into the tuner, and I would just tape, it's WSIX. That's Jerry House's station, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Yeah, WSIX. I would tape it. After that 120-minute came, I came back, I put in another one. So by the end of the trip, I had a whole box of T120s of SIX. And in New York, that's all I listened to. So I was in another world driving around New York City, and I was in the electronics business. I had an electronics company. I was installing stereos, and that's how I made my money. It was, wow. I would call it my waitress job, but it was a lot more than that. It's kind of like I made money to get to Nashville, then enough to pay bills, and I would just listen to WSAX. And the funniest thing was, you would get the language. You would get the, like, what was funny and what was not funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how they said things. You'd listen to the songs and the comments. And so I lived Nashville in New York. And then I would come down. I had a little grip on it. But
pretty enterprising. Yeah.
It was really cool. I mean, yeah. I thought it was cool because it was like I was in my own little world that nobody else in the other cars
right.
were listening to. Of course, that's when Howard Stern was on AM, and I listened to him a little bit, too. So you know, that was fun. But between Howard Stern, I was listening to country music. I was listening to the country stations, you know, where they're saying, you know, we're going to have our truck outside the White Castle and in wherever it was, you know, in Cool Springs and across the street from Dillard's. And, you know, I was getting these locations in my head. I didn't quite know where everything was. But I started understanding, it's Dillard's. Now I know you did.
Yeah.
And I was looking for the WSIX truck, and, you know, it was like crazy, you know. And I dug it, and I remember coming down here, and they did a promotion for Clint Black, and he was singing on top of the Tower Records on the roof of the Tower Records on West End Avenue. How cool was that?
Yeah.
I mean, oh my God, look, the real people, they're right there performing, you know, and I was going, this is awesome, you know, and so I started getting into it, and I remember playing, going to the Broken Spoken East Nashville,
yeah.
you know, and Debbie Champion, Lee Rascone, they were doing their nights there. And I remember just taking my guitar, and at the time, it was not that big room in the back. It was the room across the street from the bathrooms, you know. Right there. It was right there. It was like, you know, where they served the breakfast and stuff. Mm-hmm. It was a little tiny room, you know, an eighth of the size of what the big room was, maybe even less. And here I go. I got my guitar, and I'm listening. And who had, like, and then there was guys like Reese Wilson playing, and what's his name from the lead singer of Little Texas? What was his name? Tim Rushlow. And they're doing a set, and I'm going, man, I can't win. You know, like, these guys are killing me. And I got my guitar in the back, and I'm going, I didn't take it in because I was afraid. Then Debbie had an open mic, and I put my name down, and I was either walking out to get my guitar, or I was just walking out to go home. So there was this visual. I mean, it was really visual that stays with me till this day. Broken Spoke. Remember, they had the Broken Spoke Songwriters Cafe.
That's right.
And they had the Broken Spoke Cowboy Saloon, you know,
mm-hmm, right.
which had loud country music, which was cool too, you know. And it was in the same building. How nutty is that? Well, to the left of it was a trailer park, if you remember. And to the right of it was a Taco Bell. It was a full moon. And I'm like going in my car and I'm like getting this visual. It's like a snapshot in my head. Taco Bell, Broken Spoke, trailer park, full moon. And I remember saying to myself, if I take my guitar out of this trunk, my life is going to change. And it really, I mean, I took it and it couldn't get any different. Here I am on, you know, WSM. Come on, I'm from, you know, Park Slope, Brooklyn. You know what I mean? And so I took my guitar out and I went in. I did some stuff that I was playing and everybody liked it. So it's okay. Then I'm going to suck as bad as I thought, you know? But anyway, just continued on with doing that. And Debbie Champion was awesome. She always booked me. And I remember she booked me on the CMA night. Well, I didn't even really quite know what the CMAs were.
Right.
But there was nobody there, you know, because everybody was watching the CMAs. And
yeah.
So it was a whole big thing. What happened was
Super Bowl night, CMA night. Those are usually times when
I know it.
You know,
well, I'm here. Isn't there some game going on right now?
Yeah, but it's not the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl's in 2 weeks. That's
different.
Right. So, well, listen, we got to take a quick break, but we're going to be back with a whole lot more of hit songwriter Billy Lee here on The Music Row Show. See you in a few.
Still got the car. I got a letter from the bank. So- instead of drinking. Got down on one knee and remember what my daddy said to me. He said when one door closes, another door.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with hit songwriter Billy Lee, and that's a tune of his called Hell in the Highway.
Hell in the Hallway.
Hallway. Hallway. I can't even read my own writing. You know, look at that. That looks like highway, doesn't it?
You know what?
Hell in the Hallway.
I wrote that with a fabulous host of the Commodore, Rick Stewart. I know he's
Rick Stewart.
Hey, yeah,
Rick.
Man. Actually, that's him singing. Is he doing a great job? That
it
was
sounded
a,
great.
We you know, love I used, Rick. I used to do some stuff for an organization called the Black Rock Coalition.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a lot of, just all black rock and roll musicians, you know, and I would master and mix some of their stuff. And I was listening to like some of the In Living Color kind of stuff, and I wanted to do something more rock and roll. I was getting tired of the, you know, the stuff that's going on. So I just wanted to just cut it and just do like three-piece band, even though I was everybody.
Yeah.
Just one track. The guitar was just straight. If it was screwed up, it was screwed up, and that was cool. Now, my girlfriend just texted me and told me I was talking too fast.
Talking...
Do you guys think I'm too fast?
What? No, you're talking fine.
Okay,
really,
so,
don't you're talking fine.
So,
I know I am not from here.
Talk about Lee Tunes, because you do all sorts of stuff with your studio and everything.
Yeah. I have a studio called Lee Tunes, and anybody can get in touch with me at Billy Lee Tunes. That's TUNES, not like the cartoon. So BillyLeeTunes@gmail.com, and I do demos for songwriters and stuff like that. And I have a pretty nice little facility. I'm very comfortable with small places. I don't know why.
Well, you might be growing up and doing that stuff in the little brownstone.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The second bedroom in my condo is like three times larger than any other studio that I've owned. So I mean, I'm like, I can do this and not touch a wall. I got guitars hanging up. It's really cool. I have like all my Beatle collection. I have a Fox amp, a Beatle amp, and I have the Hofners and the Country Gentlemen's and the Rickenbackers. My Jonathan Rickenbackers, like that's like when
and
I
what's
die,
the address?
That's going to be buried with me. Huh?
I said, and what's the address?
I got a great alarm system.
Oh, darn it.
Flamethrowers come out if anybody walks in the studio when I'm not there. And, you know, and I do song consultation for people as well. You know, song consultation, I always found it's kind of interesting. Like, who's it coming from? And like, what have you done? Like, you know, why should I listen to you kind of thing? Well, you know, I don't know. But I think I have a lot of training in listening to what good songs are. You know, I do get a little confused by the charts right now because I'm so used to writing songs, like real songs. And I don't feel as though it's the same kind of song. It's kind of mixed. It's kind of mixed in. So I'm in that loop, you know, to do the new kind of stuff. But man, it's not so easy, you know. And there is a young thing that goes on. There's a way that they talk. I love writing with young writers. They're awesome, you know. They don't talk like normal or correct, but it's cool. You know, I guess we didn't either, did we? We had our own language.
We had our own language. We just got used to it. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, like, you know, you're hooking up doesn't mean what it means to most people. And I say, hey, Steve, you know, let's hook up. Scott, let's hook up. You know, it's like, what? You know, what? It means
not
get
that there's
together.
Anything wrong with that.
No, it means let's get together, man. Let's get together,
okay.
man.
Let's well, let's get together up. And take one last commercial break. We're going to be back, and we're going to talk about the one when we get back. So you're listening to the Music Row Show. We're here with Billy Lee. We'll be right back.
Back to the Music Row Show. We're here with hit songwriter Billy Lee, and that's his big old hit for Gary Allen called The One. That's a pretty cool song.
I think so. Oh, you know what? Before we move on, I'd like to give each one of you guys a Billy Lee glow-in-the-dark pick.
Glow-in-the-dark,
sweet. Glow-in-the-dark, man.
Well, just for that, we're going to give
you... I'll leave this one over here for you, buddy.
We're going to give you an oil change from Toyota Cold Springs. Talk about this song. Talk about writing it, and how did you get it to Gary?
Well, you know what? Every song that I know. Well, let me move on just a little bit. Let me go back just a second. I'm going to go to a different kind of songwriting a few years back. Right now, songwriting and getting hit songs is being in somebody's camp, and that's hard to do.
Right.
Right. We all know that. It's hard to do, you know. I mean, me and Jason Aldean are not like that anymore, so, you know. We had written the song, and I actually wrote it wrote it in New York City. And
who's we?
Me and Karen Mano, okay. My co-writer. And before even writing the song, we started listening to it. We listened to the charts a lot and the songs on the radio. So we started to understand the language that they were using at that time. You know, there was a lot of Toby Keith and stuff, and Kenny Chesney. It was, you know, it was great stuff. And the one thing that was missing was a song that a guy would sing to a girl. There was a lot of girl songs. It was about girls and how beautiful you are and I want you in my truck, you know, all that kind of stuff. And Toby Keith was, you know, guilty for a lot of that. So I basically wrote a song. It was crafted as a song that a woman would like for a guy to say to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's basically what the song is. It's very simple, and it came out that way. So we demoed it one night in a studio in Laverne. My friend Gary, the studio I worked at for about 14 years in Laverne. Can you believe that? Laverne was like a million miles away back then, as far as I was concerned. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and the vocalist was a little off key. And now I'm going, oh God, I like my version better. But that can't be, because this guy's a famous singer. So we had to do something. And Gary had just bought an auto tune. Mm-hmm. And I said, does that work, man? He goes, I don't know. You want to try it? And the way you used to have to do it back then is you would have to bounce the vocal to another track. And so we were listening to the song word at a time. Okay, we need to tune it, untune it. You know, so we're doing that. So we got a really clean track. And I had a meeting with a friend of mine, a good friend who passed away, Joni Foraker. Joni Foraker was working for Borman Entertainment. And she was managing Faith Hill, Trace mm-hmm. Atkins, and Keith Urban, and Lone Star. I mean, a few.
Yeah, she was busy.
Handful of, you know, low-level artists. So I had a meeting with her that morning, and I just finished this thing. I went back to the hotel, took a shower, took a quick nap, had an 11 o'clock meeting. And I said, what do you think of this? And she went, oh, God, this song is great. I want Trace to do it. She didn't say, I'm going to put it on hold. I want Trace to do it. And I'm going, Trace? Well, that's kind of odd. He doesn't do these kind of things, but maybe he needs to, mm-hmm. you know? And so anyway, so long story short, he passed on it. On about December 20th, I believe. Mm-hmm. You go home for Christmas with no cut, you know. But what it was Trace Atkins records were produced by two producers, Dan Huff and Trey Bruce.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so Trey turned it down. Now we have to get to Huff. How do we get to Huff? Well, my good friend Cindy was the manager of Shadazy.
Mm-hmm.
And she happened to be, Dan was a good friend, and she happened to be having dinner with him. And she shared an office with John Lytle, who was Gary Allen's manager. Yep. She was making a copy to give to Dan Huff, and John walked by. He goes, hey, Billy, what you doing, man? I said, Cindy's making a copy so she can give it to Dan Huff. He goes, oh, that's a pretty good tune. She goes, well, you know what? If Trace doesn't want to do it, maybe Gary can do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I went, yeah, you think he can sing it? I said, okay, cool. Well, all right, well, whatever. Anyway, we'll just let it go. And the next thing you know is Huff passed on it, and we got a call. I think it was Sunday. It was a Sunday night. It was a Sunday night from Tony Brown, the Godfather.
Yeah, right.
Tony,
yeah.
He wears the ring. You got to kiss him when he walks by.
Right.
So he was calling and put us on speakerphone and says, hey, you know, this is Tony, and I have some people in the office. I have Mark Wright. And I have Gary Allen, and I have John Lytle, and I have Shane Barrett, you know, all these people in the office.
All the heavyweights, yeah.
I think one of the jokes was, so you guys actually work like, on the Sunday night because nobody seems to be around during the week. That didn't go over very well. And so he said something like, well, you know, want to do this song, can we do it? And I said, yeah, man, you know, and can you fax me the lyrics? Fax me the lyrics, oh my God. Okay, I got to fax the lyrics. And we did it. And I said, when are you recording? He said, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. I said, okay, well, that's cool. And I'm kind of going, nobody asked me for publishing. I said, okay, be quiet. Nobody asked for publishing. And nobody ever asked for publishing.
Nice.
Now, a week before that, I couldn't give the song away.
Yeah.
I literally couldn't give it away. I'm shopped Nashville like crazy. But anyway, what happened was it came out, and they did a test market, and John called. I picked up the phone. He said, well, I guess you're going to have the next single on the record. And I probably made a fool out of myself and said stuff that I didn't, well, I don't know what I said, but I was happy, and he knew that. So, and he became a good friend at that time. So it was good. And so they recorded it, and, you know, Mark Wright did a lot of the production on it.
The really, production's gorgeous.
It is.
And it was so pop and so different than anything else. Basically, I believe that he needed a hit song to get a monster deal. Now, that song was actually in the top 40, I believe, for 49 weeks.
Wow.
It was in there for a long time.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. This is never going to stay up there for years. I mean, that'd be really awesome. And, you know, it became a huge, huge hit, and it was great, man. It was exciting. But I believe that John Lytle was a very smart guy, because I don't think that they necessarily wanted to put on the record, because I think Gary thought it was a little bit too schmaltzy for him. So what John said, why don't you play it for Angela, see what she thinks. It was his fiance at the time. Mm-hmm. And he played it for her, and she says, you know, it's the most beautiful song you've ever done, and blah, blah, blah. And I remember meeting her, you know, a couple of times, and she said, thank you for giving my husband a career. And I, you know, she just said it in a really cool way. Not like, I didn't give him his career. He's just great, you know. But the one thing about having a song like that, he was doing a Brooks and Dunn tour.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in New Jersey at the Arts Arena there, PNC, I believe. And he announced that the writers of this song were local people. Now, I heard two New York guys. We were interviewed on that radio station, whatever it was.
Okay.
And it was cool. You know, like, how did two New York guys get on the Gary Allen record? We don't know. It was like, you really don't know.
Yeah.
I think everything in the music business, if I ever gave anybody any piece of advice, is if you stop doing it, your chances are zero.
Yeah.
Because you might accidentally be there at the time somebody needs what you have. That's exactly what it is. And I remember Gary saying to me, man, timing is everything, you know? Yeah. And that's it. I mean, I said, wow. And he said that to me. I went, wow, you're right. And he was in the dressing room for the first time. He was going to perform the song solo at the radio thing, CRS, you know? And I remember saying to him, dude, you're playing the wrong chord. You know? And he just went up there just solo. No intro. He just started singing it. And I was like, and I just fell apart, man.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. And then when he announced, like I said, in New Jersey, there were two writers were there, man. There was a line of people that wanted our autograph.
Look at you.
And
nice.
This is my favorite song. And till this day, I mean, knock on wood, and people come up to me all the time and say, you know, that song changed my life. I was going through something at the time, and that song gave me the strength to do this. Now, I never knew that song could do that, you know. And now
that's awesome.
Till this day, if I play that song. You know, hey, that was my wedding song, and that was my sister's wedding song, and blah, 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 blah. So go on and on. So.
And I'm guessing as one of the writers, you got to pick the female lead in the video, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, of course. All writers get to do that. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
People want to find out more about you. Can they go online somewhere and find you?
No.
Reverb Nation.
Reverb Nation.
Billy Lee Music. That's right.
Yeah, that's me.
All right. Well, thanks
again
for coming.
Yeah, I am getting a website. I owned a website for the last 4 years. I just haven't done anything about it.
All right. Hey, man.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so
much.
We'll see you next time.
Check out themusicrowshow.com. We got lots of information there for you for upcoming shows, and we'll see you next week.